You are now listening to the Friends of Rugby podcast. Relax your anus. Balls. Thick thighs. Camille Schacht. Where's his neck? Eddie Jones. You're fucked, mate. We're nice now.
We're recording. Hello, friends. You're listening to the Friends of Rugby. And I am Frankless. Today, I'll be Frankless for the next few episodes. He went back to the Holy Land, Wales. So I'm all by my lonesome, but I'm not. I have a special guest. The Fair Weather Rugby Fan Triple X. Make sure I add that in there. Keith, how you doing?
I am good. It's going to be another hot-ass day here in North Texas, but yeah, I'm keen, man. What another good weekend of rugby behind us.
I'm glad to have you on the show. How busy are you with these things? Like, are you doing like podcasts and collaborations all the time?
Pretty much at least once a week. I do my own with my mate in Johannesburg and Hauteng, or I'm getting on with other people. I've recently gotten much, much bigger on TikTok, so I'm collaborating quite a bit on that as well.
Just right before the ban? Just grow that audience on the TikTok right before the ban?
It's not going to happen. I live in the U.S. It's not going to happen. I don't think it actually happened, so.
Well, first off, too, we have some stuff to be excited about, you and I. For the last, this last weekend, the Canadian women and the American women with some big wins.
Yeah, saw the USA women get the dub over New Zealand, which, you know, right on ladies. Don't we just wish our men's sides would kind of get to that point?
Oh man, maybe. We don't even want to talk about them. We kind of ignore that Canadian men's rugby exists on the Friends of Rugby. Kind of we hide them in the closet here. So yeah, there's no men's rugby in Canada. But yeah, the Canadian women got their first win over the Black Ferns ever. The USA women beat what's the Wallaroos?
The ladies, yeah, I think they're the Wallaroos, I think, yeah, for Australia, the Aussie ladies.
Yeah, so that's some big news. But let's get into you. So, what's your rugby story? How did you get into rugby? Like, where does this love and passion start from?
So, much like you, a born Canadian, born just outside of Brampton, but I grew up in Brampton, Ontario, Canada. It was a very large immigrant community. Anybody that's ever been there, very huge immigrant. Both my parents were immigrants. My mother was from Italy and my dad was a South African. And I grew up not playing rugby, not following rugby. I grew up like any other Canadian kid. At the age of 3, I got my first pair of skates and I hit the ice. And you can either skate or you can't. If you can't, you become a drummer in the greatest rock band of all time. Neil Peart couldn't skate. That's why he became a drummer. But so I grew up playing hockey. And back in about 95, the South Africans were finally allowed to compete in the World Cup. And my dad sat me down on the Chesterfield.
They used the Chesterfield. Anyways, continue. Sorry.
For anybody that's not familiar, yes, that is a very Canadian thing to say, is a Chesterfield. But sat me down in front of the Chesterfield, in front of our old wooden box TVs.
Oh, I had one of those when I was growing up too.
Kids, and yeah. My dad never went to a single hockey game. Just was not his thing. And he said, you know, hey son, you know, no matter what they tell you, this is something you can be proud of. And obviously, the Springboks were victorious. I didn't per se become a rugby fan at that point because I was still playing ice hockey. And then always kind of paid attention around World Cup time. It's really hard to follow if you live here in North America or you live outside of rugby playing countries. And then mm-hmm. I had the great fortune of a job offer in New Zealand. And I don't think there's another country in the world that is rugby crazy as those Kiwis. And that's where it kind of came back. And it came back with a vengeance. And I've been a diehard fan since, I'd say, I reckon, like 2013, 2012, 2011. And it's just been a great game that I enjoy. It's all of my favorite aspects of sport. And that's where it kind of came from. The seeds were planted in 95. The tree finally started producing fruit around 2012.
So where did the idea of starting a YouTube channel come from? So what sparked this?
So
am I putting you on the spot here?
No. So there were a couple of other content creators. You've dubbed, and I've continued to dub, and I've even told him this, the Mr. Rogers of rugby content, and that would be Mark over in Aotearoa, yeah. New Zealand, 2 cents. It was him, and it was a gentleman that unfortunately is no longer with us, a gentleman by the name of Gareth Mason, Walking Tall with yes. G-Man was his channel, and it was really, both of them were like, hey man, like, you don't sound like us. And I'm like, well, obviously. They're like, but there needs to be another voice talking about this sport in another part of the world to help it grow. And my first video I ever made was me slicing bultong at the kitchen table on a Friday night. And I just started making rugby videos, like just opinion videos and breakdowns. And obviously, it led to me covering domestic rugby a bit as well. But yeah, it was just kind of two guys that were like, hey, we think you have a voice. And, you know, that's kind of, and it's just kind of been that way ever since. Some people like my opinion, some people don't. Some people give this guy citizenship to our country right now, and some guys are like, don't ever come to my country ever again. And yeah, it's
have
just,
you gotten
it's just,
any kind of like do you get like abusive messages or anything online, like anything like significant?
So for those that don't know, you know, Canadian stereotype is we're all very, very nice, and I don't think it's a stereotype. It's very true. I will tell you, there's been about a handful of incidences, but the absolute worst has been the French. I've gotten like death threats from the French.
They're incredible, aren't they?
And it's funny because like I made a video in response saying, of all the nationalities that I fear in the world, you guys are not even close to the top, guys. Like us being Canadians, like I even like laughed at French Canadians when I'd play hockey against them because I just thought they were hilarious. Like, and yeah, so French have been bad. The Irish got my original TikTok shut down during the World Cup. So when I restarted TikTok, I made it a point to reach out to Irish audiences to quell the things, because we might, for as much as we don't like each other, we have united around our hatred of another team, and that's the English.
Yeah, that's how it always goes.
But I
mean, Irish, like, the Irish the South Africa in South Africa, like Ireland and South Africa, is kind of a weird relationship in rugby and how it's grown into, like the mixture of, because there's a lot of South African influence in Irish rugby right now too, especially with the coaching.
It's more Kiwi influence more than anything. I respect them, but at the same time, I'm 41, about to be 42. I remember how that team was nothing until Joe Schmidt got there. They were a laughing stock. And I think with their younger fans, they tend to think that the last 8 years erases the prior 100 years, and it doesn't, to me at least.
that's a lot of criticism I see with a lot of people with the Irish, because like, did you guys remember that you guys used to suck? Like, you guys used to suck. Like, that there's like a kind of a lack of humility coming from Irish fans, or especially the Irish. I think it's the Irish media really that kind of portrays the whole like forgetting that we sucked thing going on. But anyways, so over the years you've been doing this YouTube channel. How has it changed? Like how was the YouTube channel, like where did it go in any directions that you didn't know it was going to go into? Or
it was when Rassi, after that second British and Irish Lions game, when Rassi got suspended and the video got leaked, that was like an overnight thing for me. I went from having 200 or 300 followers to maxing out at somewhere around 12,000 at that point. That was when I knew, okay, like, this is going somewhere. It's not just kind of a dead end kind of thing. And there was a moment where I thought about, hey, cash out your 401k, buy a camera equipment, and do this for a living. And the reason I didn't do it was because I had a daughter who needed health insurance, and I couldn't afford it on my own. Unfortunately, I live in America. We know this problem here, but it was kind of that. That was kind of the point where everything went from just me doing stuff in the cab of my car to like people like seriously asking me for content constantly. And it was like, wow. So still to this day, it's been about 4 years, and every Saturday I do video. I watch rugby and I do videos. It's what I do. So,
when did you decide to retire the roadside studio in the car? Because I remember all your videos, there used to be you in the car, you know, having your own personal thoughts.
When my missus and the kid moved out, I had an extra room, and that's when it became an in the house kind of thing. And I bought a light, I started buying, and I'm still constantly purchasing new equipment constantly. Like the headphones I'm wearing right now, I need to upgrade. I just haven't done it yet because I'm getting married next month. So,
good for you.
But, yeah, it's just, it was a little over a year ago that it really went from just in my car to like, let's seriously sit down and make videos. So yeah, that's that.
So now you're just doing a video once a week now?
So I had to deal with I was covering Major League Rugby. I had a fallout with the league, obviously, in the local side here. Mm-hmm. And I didn't cover domestic rugby for a while. And then I had a South African group reach out to me a couple of months back saying, hey, look, we're based in Cape Town. We would like to pay you to cover Major League Rugby for us. So I do one or two videos a week for them because, you know, that's a paying gig. And then I will do a YouTube video. As we get into international season, those will crack back up. But I've really, honestly, TikTok has kind of become like my bread and butter now. TikTok is doing everything right for its content creators. They make it easy to make money. YouTube used to be so much better before Google bought them out. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. And I still think YouTube is great, but even YouTube is kind of starting to be looked at kind of like Facebook. It's like kind of old people's technology to a lot of the younger kids. And I'm trying to stay relevant, so I go where the kids are. And YouTube's great because you can do long format videos, that kind of thing, but it's not nearly as good as it used to be, in my opinion, at least.
The world is all about the shorts.
You know, attention spans. Like, well, it's easy to go live and make money on TikTok as opposed to YouTube. Like, you have to meet a threshold, and the threshold just keeps getting higher and higher every year for them. So it's just kind of like, yeah, I'll just go to TikTok. So
what's the future? What's the future for the Fairweather rugby fan then?
I'm going to continue to try to grow with the media group in South Africa, obviously, through that. And I don't want to say too many things out. There are things in the works. There are major people that have wanted to work with me, like major companies. And, you know, I'm just going to see how that goes. I mean, I don't plan on quitting my day job anytime soon because it does pay very well. But, you know, if the right company was to come along and say, hey, shave off your beard and cut off your mullet and we'll pay you this much a year to do this. Yeah, you're damn right. I would do it in a heartbeat. So, right now this is just a hobby. This is my hobby now. I just like doing this. It's fun. I like talking about rugby. I think it's a great game to talk about. So,
oh, anytime I get a chance to talk about rugby with someone, I'm like all over it. I remember when I went to the World Cups, just trying to start conversations with random fans because it's like, you know, like it's like living. Like, do you have a friend in Texas that you could sit down and watch, like, you know, a rugby game with?
I did. And then the fallout kind of happened, but I actually, I have a follower that is a South African that lives about 70 or so clicks from me, kilometers from me, and we're supposed to meet up. And I said, hey, that's not this upcoming international because I'm getting married the day before that, but come on over, let's watch the game together. Jess and I did have the great fortune of the semifinal. We went to a pub not too far from where we live, so she could see the atmosphere of Springbok fans cheering on the crowd. And I mean, she enjoyed it. I mean, and like, that's at the end of the day, Jess is not a sports person, but she is from Oklahoma, so she comes from sports people 100%. And she even enjoys it for what it is. And at the end of the day, that's really a great thing about it. So there are people, but not a lot. No, it's Texas. No. People want to talk about football here. That's all.
Yeah. Being a rugby fan in North America is pretty much like living on the moon. I always say there used to be like a dating app for rugby fans in North America where you could like reach like other rugby fans and you could like swipe left or right.
Would we call it Rucker? The Rucker app? Instead of Tinder or Grindr, it's Rucker.
Oh, you know what? We could. I think we have an idea here. You just like go online. You can see your local rugby fans who wants to watch rugby.
You know, instead of poking them, you can offload to them. You know, like,
oh,
hey,
my gosh, this is a great. We gotta like. I'm gonna actually cut this so no one can hear this idea.
Yeah.
You don't know, Elon Musk might be listening. Take our idea.
I've got an Elon Musk story for you, if you don't mind, real quick.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, so back when I came back in, I had to get a second job because my missus wasn't really working, and I took a job driving Uber and Lyft. And it was New Year's Eve, Dallas, Texas, McKinney Avenue, and I pull up next to a Tesla, and it says Musk 2, or Elon 2 on the license plate, and I'm like, there's no way, there's no way. Yeah, it was him. If you've ever seen the back of my automobile, I have proudly a South African flag. I have the license plate guard as a South African flag. And then I have my favorite South African saying, which is now, just now, and now, now. So I pull up a bit ahead of him. My fare was about 40 meters down on the left-hand side of the road. And I look over at him, and he points to his passenger. He points to the back of my car. Gives me the thumbs up, the light turns green, and he goes away. My waiting passengers down the street saw that. So I have seen Elon Musk in the flesh.
Gave me the thumbs up.
I don't want to talk any more about him, but yes, I have seen Elon Musk in person before. So.
I want to talk about this MLR stuff you're doing. So how has that been going?
So I'll be completely honest with you. Now that I have no investment in the league emotionally, I'm just purely watching it to get information. It's great. Mm-hmm. When you're not involved in the politics of the game domestically here, it's great. I don't want to go into a whole thing about what happened with that whole situation. Because at the end of the day, it happened and there's nothing else I can do about it. But
yeah, we don't have to get into that here. Don't worry about that.
In the same respects, it's like, I like watching it. Do I think it's a great league? No. I don't put it anywhere even close to even the leagues I don't follow. I don't follow Japan. I don't follow France. I don't follow the Premiership. But it's painfully obvious. It's none of those three things. But to help the sport grow here in North America, or at least in the United States, yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect for just that reason alone.
What's the vibe around the MLR this year with fans? So, because since you're paying so much attention to the league, because I haven't been paying any attention to the MLR at all.
Yeah.
Is there anything different about this year than anything else, or is it? Do you think it's growing? Is it going in the right direction? Like, what's your opinion on this?
So like the falling out I kind of had to do with a bit of like smoke and mirrors that I felt like the league was doing, and I hate to say it, I still kind of see it with them. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors, but the overall quality of the game is growing. And the fans, you're starting to see, because it just seemed like, honestly, when you went to rugby games, it was either people who had never been to one, or it was people like you and me who were diehards and loved it, you know? You're starting to see a little bit more, having the All Blacks in Fiji do a test in San Diego is not going to hurt. Obviously, San Diego does the best in attendance by far in the entire league, but Houston's been doing really, really well. Houston has been doing a lot of outreach in their community, doing commercials with local celebrities. They did a commercial with Mattress Mac, who's like a really big furniture, and he's a really big, charitable person. I'm trying to think of the word for that. But anyways, he gives a lot to charity, and he's attached his name to that organization. So the league is growing. I do see the fans growing, even, you know, with some of the expansion issues. Like, it seems like Miami does okay in attendance. LA does okay in attendance. Carolina is playing in way too big of a stadium, much like Dallas. But you're seeing it. Is the league growing? Is the league still going to be here in a year? Yes, 100%. So that's what I've seen so far. It's not.
Do you remember those John Goodman commercials? I think it was for the NOLA Gold. Did you ever see those?
I never saw those.
He did like a series of ads for them for a while, and he was like really skinny, like a really skinny old John Goodman. You don't remember those at all?
I never saw them. Never saw them, man. Nah.
What's the deal with this? What are they called? They're like the American team, like the anthem.
Oh, the anthem of Carolina. So
Carolina's okay. When you said Carolina, that's what you were referring to.
Yeah, it's the anthem.
So what's the story
Carolina.
With them, like?
So, obviously, we had a lot of retraction this last offseason. Toronto out. The biggest market in the country out, New York, which was really, really a big one. Atlanta out, per se. So, World Rugby had been wanting to put a foothold, much like they did before the Japan World Cup. Do you remember Japan had a Super Rugby team? The Sea Wolves, or
the
Sun Wolves.
Yeah.
And which the team was trash. Their jerseys were, I have a Sun Wolves jersey, and their jerseys were the best jerseys, in my opinion.
I have a Sun Wolves jersey too, and a backpack.
Oh, God. Their jerseys were clean, man. I love the Sun Wolves jerseys.
The Chichi Chubu Stadium they played in, whatever it was called.
It was awesome. I think that's what World Rugby. World Rugby is financing the Anthem of Carolina. The original idea was to produce American players, but even they, after two or three weeks, realized, okay, Americans are not going to win us any games, so they started bringing in the foreigners. That is a basically World Rugby World Rugby funded team. The only way they were able to do it, though, was the league had to do something that I was overly critical on, and a lot of former players were which is they had to get a players union. So they announced the players union in the offseason. You've heard nothing from it again, ever since. I even emailed it. I don't want to go into conspiracy. I don't think it's actually a thing. I think it was just something they created an LLC to say, hey, we have a players union now. So now World Rugby has brought in a finance team. They're actually going to be financing a second team next year. I don't know
where
if you've heard
from?
About this. Nuevo Laredo.
Where is that?
The other side of the border.
in Mexico.
Monterrey is getting a team next year.
So who is funding, World Rugby is funding that? And that is going to be in the MLR?
Yep.
I didn't even hear about this. That's crazy news.
Well, how do you think Chile got in?
With the World Rugby?
World Rugby financed Chile. That's why they have a rugby program now. World Rugby's trying to grow the sport. And I have told people overseas time and time again, we are going to have our own Six Nations on this side of the world. It's going to be USA, Canada, Mexico, and it's going to be Chile, Uruguay, and probably Brazil.
Yeah, that would definitely something, some kind of like big stage tournament like that would be awesome.
And we'll still be doing the Pacific tournament with Japan and the Pacific Islands. I think it would be great. I think it would be absolutely great to grow. Because, I mean, like, I talk regularly with the women's captain for Mexico. She's covered in tattoos. She's really cool chick. She comes up here and plays LFL football, which is the women's football league here. She does that in the off seasons usually, but it's a growing sport, and Mexico has money. Mexico, despite what people think, Mexico is not Venezuela. Mexico is rich. Mexico is extremely wealthy.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't even know that. I'm excited for that. But what about the quality of the MLR games? Like, what, the quality, is it, you think it's gone up in the last couple of years, or has it stayed the same?
I definitely think so. I think the gap, which I was hoping was going to close a bit more this year, is still kind of there. Like, you've got your top-tier teams. You've got your Seattles, your Houstons, your San Diegos, your New Englands. But then you have the teams at the very bottom that can't compete at all. Obviously, Dallas is looking to finally, you know, have a decent season, and they'll do okay. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the expanded playoff format, but I get it. It's to grow, and that's really have the teams gotten better? Yes. Look at a team like NOLA Gold. Look at Dallas. Look at Utah. Look at DC. They've all gotten exponentially better, and a lot of them now will feature American or Canadian players as marquee players. I mean, Sam Gola is a big player for Dallas, USA Eagle. You had, you know, Justice Spears is doing really well for himself still. I'm trying to think of the big lock that played for DC. Now he plays for New England. He's from the Maritimes, but he's got like a gap front tooth. Really nice guy. Obviously, we've got a couple of Canadian internationals playing here with Liam Murray from BC and Steve's from Winnipeg. I mean, Winnipeg.
Yeah, you got to make sure you get that right.
Yeah.
I know that New England is our unofficial Canadian team now.
Yeah.
Because we got almost a whole starting pack of Canadians.
I don't think
so.
I mean,
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead, bro.
What about how's your relationship with the best league in the world, as I always say, the URC? How is that going?
So it's a love. So I know you're a Six Nations man. I know you're a European rugby man. Let me just air out my grievances to begin with, okay? People would say, man, Super Rugby's really short. And I would be like, no, it's a long, grueling season.
Mm-hmm.
How I don't get how you have three simultaneous tournaments going on as well as the URC at the same time. You have the Champions Cup, the Challenge Cup, and Six Nations. This makes no sense to me whatsoever. But
it's all about the money.
And having to explain to Europeans that, like, you know, they'll complain about how, like, American sports is a commercial every, you know, 5 minutes. I'm like, well, yeah, you're doing three tournaments at one time. It's about money, guys. It's about making money.
Because you would have grown up watching Super Rugby.
Me? Oh, 100%. That's been my
league. Yeah, so you would have grown up watching Super Rugby, paying attention to Super Rugby. So when the South African teams entered the Northern Hemisphere rugby, when they entered the URC, like, what was the major difference that you noticed right away?
The style of play. I mean, European rugby is not Kiwi rugby. And to be fair, I really just didn't, I didn't like it. And I mean, there's a certain part of me that misses Super Rugby, obviously. But I'll tell you the thing that I don't miss. I don't miss having to stay up until 1 a.m. to watch games. Because all the games in Europe, at the earliest, they start at like 7 a.m. here, 6 a.m. So.
Yeah, it's definitely easier to watch North. I think that's how basically it was just so much easier to watch Northern Hemisphere rugby.
Yeah.
In North America, to just because of the times, and it's just more accessible too in North America. But like, so when you said like you didn't like the style in Northern Hemisphere rugby, I always kind of like thought that like Springboks play a very Northern Hemisphere style of rugby, very traditional, forward heavy, defense focused rugby.
I've always compared it like this, and I still do. So you have the NBA, which is the biggest basketball league in the entire world. And then you have the WNBA, which is the biggest women's basketball league in the world. This is just 100% my opinion. This is not a fact. Don't take this as a fact. But to me, European rugby is like WNBA. Southern Hemisphere rugby is the NBA. There are good teams, don't get me wrong, but something I have been vocal about in recent months is that I probably would have a lot more respect for Northern Hemisphere rugby if the teams were comprised of 100% Northern Hemisphere players. There are,
how do you think,
a lot of imports playing in the Premiership and the URC teams in the North. France is really, I mean, you've got like, the Sale Sharks is like 11 South Africans on that roster. Like, it just doesn't. Then they'll say, well, look at New Zealand teams. Well, at least Tonga, Samoa, and Fiji are close to New Zealand. I mean, it's just, that's just how I look at it personally.
Have you think the Springboks benefit? Like, how do you think, like, moving to the Northern Hemisphere, has that affected the Springboks? In a good way, a bad way?
In a great way.
Better?
In a great way, because I feel like it's made their game multifaceted. They are ready for the European teams when they play them, because they play them year-round. And I think you're starting to see that damage with New Zealand now, because they're not playing a multifaceted game. They're playing competitive games against each other, not so much against Australia. And that's where I see kind of the dying a bit of Super Rugby, because it's not nearly as diverse. The URC is extremely diverse. And I do like the URC for that fact. You've got different style teams from every, you know, like, I'm not the biggest Leinster fan, but I get it. Like, I get it. They're a great team. And I think South African teams have had to change, because it's no longer playing out wide against the Kiwis, because that's what they do. Like, you have to get into the trenches against Europeans, and I like that. I like that. So I do approve of the URC over Super Rugby now, but I'm still going to watch Super Rugby just because it's what I grew up with.
So you still watch Super Rugby now to this day?
I watch usually between 4 and 6 games of URC a week. I watch full MLR games, usually about 3, and then I usually watch between 4 and 6 Super Rugby games every week.
So you're putting in the time into rugby there.
I'm able to, honestly, I'm able to do it when I'm driving to and from work. I'll just put it on my phone and listen to it, or when I'm on my lunch break at work, I'll put the game on my computer. I'm thankful that I have a company that's cool enough that when they come out on a Friday afternoon and I have a game on, they're not upset with me, because I'm still able to work while the game is on. So they know what my passion is, they know what my hobby is, and they're okay with it. And my soon to be wife, she knows Saturdays are rugby days.
Yeah, Saturday is a rugby day. It's always how it goes. When the South African Super Rugby teams were going into the Northern Hemisphere, what was your first initial thought? Like, what was, when you first heard that news, what were you thinking? Like, what was like going on in your mind? Were you like, oh, those teams, those Northern Hemisphere teams are fucked? Or like, what were you thinking?
Well, who won the URC the first year? A South African team won. And I kind of felt like, hey, we're about to run over these teams. And I'm still willing to say a good third of the teams I feel that way about. Unfortunately for your partner on this podcast, Wales, I don't know what happened. They're really bad now.
He's not here, so we could talk all the shit we can about
Wales.
We can fucking just
Welsh rugby is in like the worst place right now, and I feel so bad for them.
We can poop all over it right now if we want.
I felt like we were going to run over the teams, and I mean for a certain percentage of the teams, yes, we have run all over them. But then there's teams at the top that have gotten better because they've had to learn to play that physical style, and then they've also had to do something that they weren't used to that we were used to, which is long distance travel. In Super Rugby, you did a lot of long distance traveling to Argentina, Australia, New Zealand, Japan. The URC, they're having to learn, like, man, a flight from one hemisphere to the other, that's draining on the body. That's taxing.
Yeah, that's something that the South
body.
African teams were used to. They were already prepped for that kind of,
they
kind
were,
of
yeah.
travel.
Yeah. So, and you see it. You'll see it like this weekend when you'll have the teams that come from the Northern Hemisphere to South Africa having to adjust, especially in a place like Loftus, because you're not only adjusting to the temperature, you're adjusting to the high altitude of it as well.
What surprised you?
What's that?
What surprised you about the when they came over, though? Was there some things that you didn't expect the South African teams?
I didn't expect the parity that kind of exists in the teams now. I kind of figured it was going to be one team kind of being like super dominant. And as it sits right now, we might have three South African teams making the elimination round. And I did not expect, I actually, honestly, at first expected all four. And now the reality, I kind of expected one or two. And it's really not really working out that way. And I mean, honestly, if the Sharks had started off on a better foot, they would be in the hunt as well. But unfortunately, they ran into a net and got caught up and just never really, they've kind of started putting it together now. But that's probably that been team. The biggest surprise is I thought we would be a lot more dominant and stay dominant, and we just haven't been as much. So
that Sharks team is actually quite surprising this year, because when you look at the lineup and the output that they've been having, like, it's kind of, they are the most shocking team, probably rugby team right now in any league, because they should be up there in like the top four when you look at their roster.
They're stacked. They are stacked.
What's your South African team?
So, by geography, by where my people are from, I should be a Bulls supporter. I was not initially a Bulls supporter. I was a Lions supporter for many, many years when they had Foff de Klerk, Elton Yonkees, back when they had the original coach. They did really well. They made a couple Super Rugby finals. Then I switched allegiances to the Western Cape, the Stormers, because they had Evan, they had Sia, they had all the big names there. And now that I live in America, and it's been a few years, I am personally, I'm a fan of all four sides, but my allegiances really lie heavy to probably the Bulls and the Stormers. But I want all four sides to do well. So I don't have one team anymore. I have two or three there now. So it is what it is. I'm a homer. I can't help it.
Because like right now in the URC standings, you have Edinburgh, Benetton, and Lions, all at 49 points. And they're battling for two spots for 7th and 8th. So you got these three teams right now in like a battle. So Lions, yeah, you could have three South African teams going into the knockout stages here.
All the Lions need is a bonus point in the loss, but unfortunately, we have a break because we have the Champions games next week. And the Lions end their season in the mother city in Cape Town, so it's gonna be quite the tall order. But regardless of who gets in, I'll support my South African sides both. I'll wear. There's been times where I've worn both jerseys, and when one game was over, I just took the other one off and just started the next game. You know, I mean, it is what it is, Ben.
What's your thoughts on that Bulls drama in the Champions Cup? Do you remember all that? When they sent the B team up?
Oh, when they sent the team up north?
Confuse you?
No. Okay, so you want my honest opinion about Challenge Cup? I don't care. I really don't care about the Champions Cup or the Challenge. I really don't.
What do you think South African fans feel? Do they care?
50-50. I think some care and some don't. I mean, me personally, and I never thought it would be this way, but I talk to guys that are, we're both in our, you're 40, I'm 41, and I have a lot of followers that are 55, 60 plus, and they told me, they're like, watch, it's going to happen to you one day. I'm like, what's going to happen? Like, you're going to get to where really all you care about is international test rugby. And I'm like, no, I will never be. Yeah, I'm there. I honestly don't care.
You're losing love for the club?
I don't care about URC. I don't care about a URC title. I don't care about a Champions Cup. I don't care about a Challenge Cup. And honestly, like, as much as there's so much put into the Six Nations, dude, I really don't even care about the Rugby Championship that much, man. I just like the World Cup. It's just, I know it's where we've obviously flourished the most as Springboks, but, like, for me, it's just club rugby, and it kind of goes back to a statement I made earlier. I probably would have a lot more respect for Northern Hemisphere rugby competitions if they weren't so full of Southern Hemisphere players. I just don't. It's not all their fans, but a lot of their fans have this tendency to look down on Southern Hemisphere rugby, and it's just like, do you not see? Like, Lowe is not an Irishman. Aki is not an Irishman. Gibson Park is not an Irishman. Vepinel is not a Scot. Vanda Merva is not a Scot. Like, these people are not, they're from the Southern Hemisphere. Like, don't look down on the hand that, like, don't bite the hand that feeds you, is basically the way I look at it. And that's why I just, they're going to do the Rugby Club World Cup, and I said it already, it's going to be a bunch of Southern Hemisphere teams made up of Southern Hemisphere players playing Northern Hemisphere teams made up of Southern Hemisphere players. It's just, I don't, until, and it's not getting any better. It's going to continue to be that way. I know it is. It's just a fact. That's how the world works. We're all emigrating. I'm not a native to this land. I don't know if you're actually, are your parents both from Canada?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe that's just that immigrant mentality I have, maybe, but, like, it's just, to me, I just don't see it. Like, when they did the team of the Six Nations, the best 15, and I'm looking at it, and there's, like, six guys that were not from the Six Nations. Like, but when they do it of the Rugby Championship, every one of those people is from the Rugby Championship. Like, they're not, there's no, you know what I mean? Like, the only team you can really, two teams you can accuse of doing that in the Southern Hemisphere are Australia and New Zealand. And they, if I look at a guy on the All Blacks and he went to high school in New Zealand, I'm not going to say they cherry picked that kid. But if I look at your roster and every single one of your imports went to school in the nation that they were born, and even some of them had U20 caps or played for the Māori All Blacks, that is not a native player. You brought them there to play rugby for you. And I just don't see it. It's just, maybe it's a Southern Hemisphere thing. I don't know. But that's how I feel about the Six Nations and the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup. It'd be a lot easier if it was Northern Hemisphere teams, Northern Hemisphere players. But it's not. It's not. So that's how I feel.
Sounds like you're just scared. You're just scared of the Northern Hemisphere coming. Let's talk
about
that. Actually,
because we can see them. They're in the players are in the field in Johannesburg right now. Getting ready. Like,
let's talk about the summer tours here. How pumped are you with that?
Oh man! So we got Scotland coming back. I'm hoping for a repeat.
Ireland,
USA. I was at that game. I was at that game when USA beat Scotland. We've got that.
Oh, sorry. You're talking about USA and Scotland. Sorry. I thought you were talking about the, I thought we were still talking about the Springboks.
No, no. We'll get to that in a second. I'm happy for the tours that are coming here. Romania is coming here, yada, yada, yada. But we'll get into I just wanted to mention that real quick. But
yeah. Where are those games being, about, do you know where the game's being played in the United States?
DC. I will not go. I'm not going to be at that game. So, and then the Romania game is in Chicago. I won't go. But we're talking about, you want to talk about real rugby. We want to talk about, we're talking about, you know, is where's England's going to New Zealand?
Yes, they are.
Who is going to Australia? France?
Wales.
Wales? Oh, God, that's going to be an interesting one, to be honest with you, because we're going to see what Joe Schmidt has done to clean up that rubbish bin fire.
I think you got two teams that have been really struggling for the last few years, and now they're going to meet in a series. I can't. That's juicy.
It's going to be nasty.
Excited, too, to see bring it up like United States and Scotland. I'm actually pretty excited for this because this could be a real good test for the Eagles, too.
Canada is playing Scotland as well. I think they're playing at BMO in Toronto, maybe. But I really wish they would do the games in other places again. Like, I know that... Have they ever done it? Has Canada ever played a test in Edmonton?
Yep, they did. They played Scotland. They played Scotland in the Commonwealth Stadium. So,
did you go to the game? Yep.
Oh, yeah, I went to the game.
How was it? How was it attendance-wise?
The attendance was... The stadium is 65,000 people. It's a big stadium. And
is this where the... I don't know what they're called anymore.
The Edmonton Elks.
Are they the Elks now? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did
they keep the same color scheme?
Yes, they did.
Oh, thank God.
Just went from Eskimo to Elk. They kept the E. They kept everything else. Like, everything is the same. So it was some kind of smart marketing move. But so the stadium is like 60,000 people. It was about half full.
That's so when they did that same tour here in the States, I don't know if that was the same year, but they played at BBVA Stadium in Houston, which is where their MLS team plays. And I'd say that thing probably seats like 30,000. I'd say there was probably a good like 22,000-23,000 at that game. I've also seen the USA play Uruguay in San Antonio. There were probably about 12,000 at that. I saw the USA play Brazil at a baseball stadium in Austin, Round Rock, Texas, outside of Austin. There were maybe 8,000, 5,000, 6,000 at that game, maybe. But we talk about the serious tours. We talk about the European teams heading south. Obviously, the big one is going to be Ireland and South Africa.
How scared are you?
3 months ago, I would have been okay with 1-1. I would have been okay with 1-1. The banter online has changed my mind. I want nothing but dominance, dominance, dominance. I want to shut them up. I want to show them that you are a quarterfinal and done team at best, guys. You're the best team in Europe. You're not the best team in the world.
This is going to be two teams that, like, this is going to be the first series ever where, like, the familiar, I don't have Frank here to correct my my English here, but these two teams know each other very well now, right? Like, this is an Irish team that's going down there that's been playing South African clubs all year. Like,
familiarity.
Yeah, is intense now because these two teams know each other now. Like, yeah. these two nations, like, are, I don't think they've ever been more prepared to face each other. That's the most interesting series out of all the summer series, because these two teams now, because you're used to, like, the Springboks would play Ireland once in a while, and, like, you don't really, like, face these guys all the time, right? But now that these, like, players are playing against each other all year, like, this is going to be a spicy, spicy series.
I don't think they're ready, man. They're not ready for the scene. They're not ready for the smoke, man. The braai fires are going to be burning. It's going to be winter time, so they're going to have to keep the fires going. They're not going to be ready for the smoke, man. I'm telling you, man. It's going to be...
The last time the Boks have beat Ireland was in South Africa.
What's that?
The last time the Boks beat Ireland was in South Africa.
South Africa.
in 2016 in the series. And it's only a two game this time.
I'm like,
which really
I don't like this two
out,
game.
But I'm
yeah, I want the three game series. I want the decider. Like
a
I
decider.
Want that. But I'm like,
it's going to be great. I think there's a reason, yes, because we're playing Portugal afterwards. But I also think there's only doing two games because this is going to be bad. There's going to be a lot of blood. There's going to be injuries. It's going to be brutal. Like, I think people look at that final from last year between the All Blacks and the Springboks. I think it's going to be even more brutal than that. Like, there's going to be, it's going to be war, trench warfare is all this is going to be.
You have the world champions that, like, want some blood against a team that keeps getting touted as the number one team in the world over and over again, even though they didn't win the World Cup. Springboks won the World Cup. But, like, the rugby media keeps claiming Ireland as number one, number one, number one, number one. So the Springboks really want to shut this door. And I think a win over Ireland would shut that door once and for all. But the Irish, like, if they win this series, the talk will never end. You'll have to abandon the internet. Yeah, because I agree with you. This is gonna be a war. Like a full on war between the two teams.
I have made a promise to my Irish followers that anybody obviously can't see me. I'm heavily tattooed and covered. I've made this promise to my Irish followers that if Ireland somehow, by the grace of their Pope believing Catholicism, whatever you want to call it, if they are able to win this series in South Africa, I will be getting a shamrock tattooed on me. If they don't, they don't. It's just, I think this is what they claimed the France-Ireland Six Nations game was the final that everyone wanted to see. No, that's what they wanted to see. I think Ireland and the Springboks, that was who I picked for the final in 2023.
I wanted to see
Ireland in the final in 2023.
I was super naive. I thought that New Zealand was done for. I thought Ireland
went
over them.
I took a shot because Ireland's the first team to win a series in New Zealand. I thought, they've got them. And sure enough, they go into the quarterfinals and they lay a big old goose egg. Now, I think Andy Farrell is an amazing coach. I think he's got that juice. I think he's got, in America, we'd say he's got that dog in him. But I think he's got that dog in him for the Northern Hemisphere. I don't think that, like, Ireland likes to think that they could win the rugby championship. It's the travel and it's a war of attrition. I don't think Ireland has that in them just yet.
You're talking about the two, like, Andy Farrell and Razzie, in my eyes, are the two best rugby coaches in the world right now.
I agree.
Test rugby.
100%.
There's a lot of, like, the best of the best going against each other in this series. Ah, man, I cannot. We'll have to have you on again after these. We'll have to have you on when these games are going on for the breakdowns of these games.
Oh, man. I think Andy Farrell, great coach. He's doing a lot for that program, but I think he also came into a program that was already on really good footing with Joe Schmidt. Now we get to see.
Well, he was
really
part of that. He was part of that program too.
Yeah.
So he kind of just kept it going.
He kind of kept it going. I will say this. Here is my early predictions. Australia isn't going to get better. I lived there for a year. They're not going to get better. They're going to struggle for a while. Union has become a private school sport, much like it is in England for some schools.
Those Super Rugby scores, though, have been pretty surprising.
Playing
those Australian teams are starting to pick up some.
A bit of pace. Yeah. I think that Australia's still going to struggle. I think they'll do fine against Wales. I think they'll do fine against that. I think New Zealand, we're going to find out how bare the cupboard has been laid for them. I think you're going to see a big push in New Zealand in the next 2 years to stop the you have to play in New Zealand to play for the All Blacks. They're going to have to stop that.
That's an interesting point that you just brought up, because Scott Robertson has, there's just been a lot of articles of him talking about that rule, which is kind of if I was a Kiwi fan, I would be kind of concerned. Like, why is he so obsessed with this rule? Does he not think that they have the talent in New Zealand to compete? Like, he's very hungry to get some players from overseas to get into the All Blacks. Like, he wants to break that rule. So there must be something. He must be seeing something in my eyes. Like, if I'm going to go to down conspiracy lane here, he must be seeing something that like a lot of people aren't, or like he must be concerned, because I've been hearing this narrative a lot, how he wants to get rid of these eligibility rules.
Well, I don't think it has to be a conspiracy theory. Damian McKenzie is absolutely amazing. I am a Chiefs fan. That's my Super Rugby team is Chiefs. Damian McKenzie is absolutely electric when it comes to club. At the international test level, he's just never quite lived up to it. Who are their locks? There was talk about bringing Sam Whitelock back. He said, no, I'm retired. They have Scott Barrett, who, unfortunately, the All Blacks had one red card. It doubled when Sonny Bill Williams got one. He's gotten like two or three. He's a discipline liability at law when it comes to international test rugby. Who's his partner? Josh Lord, Tupou Vai, Tupelotu, another guy that's disappointed at international test time. I think the issue is that New Zealand rugby, it's great and it's in a good place compared to, say, the USA, Canada, et cetera, but to where it was 15 years ago, New Zealand rugby's in trouble right now. You have to have 7 or 8 world-class players to be competitive in this game. Beauden Barrett is not world-class anymore. He's not back-to-back rugby world, player of the year anymore. We saw how Will Jordan disappeared in the final. He was a non-factor. We saw Tomatai Williams, as big as he is, he's just not experienced enough. We saw, Cam Roargard do absolutely great, but he's injured now. They're bare in a lot of places on that roster. I mean, obviously, Artie Savea has come into form. I remember when he made his debut. Artie should be the captain of the team. He's absolutely electric to watch. But they're in a bad spot. Then you go across the ditch. You go to Australia. No more Michael Hooper. They've got a lot of question marks. And that's why I worry about Razor Robertson. And then also look at Crusaders, who were the most dominant Super Rugby team in history. Look at where they're at now, 1 year removed from him being gone. There's no way they should stumble the way they did.
I was saying...
Yeah, it's got me wondering.
I was saying a while ago that since he left the Crusaders and how bad they're doing now, like, if he was that much of a difference, what's he going to do when he has the All Blacks? Like, if he's that much of an amazing coach where he can make a team, like, a super great team.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm worried about. Like, if he's the difference there in the Crusaders, like, I'm worried, like, what is he going to do when he has all the best players in the country coming to play for him? Like, what's he going to be able to do there if he's the difference?
If he's a difference maker, I think, and if you want any proof of a difference maker, look at the All Blacks under Hansen, look at him under Fozzie. Hansen was the difference maker.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Hansen, to me, one of the greatest rugby coaches in history, period. Point blank, greatest win percentage. He's a 92% win percentage, win rate. There's no coach that even comes close to those numbers. And it's a hard, it's like people talk about Dan Carter being the greatest 10 in the world. While I disagree, I'm a Johnny Wilkinson fan, look at what you have to compare to. You're having to compare Richie Mwanga to Dan Carter. There's no comparison. Dan Carter was great. And I think that's the other issue that the All Blacks are going to have to go through, is that it's guys that have to live up to the guy before them, and it takes time to get. Richie McCaw didn't walk onto the pitch and was great immediately. It took him a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, they're going to go through growing pains with Razor Robertson. There's going to be a lot of growing pains on this All Blacks roster.
Let's talk about, just before we finish up here, I just want to talk about the Springbok squad. What do you think is going to be different this year? What do you think is going to be any surprises? Who's going to play 10? Like, what do you think? Like, what do you think the squad's going to look like? What do you think is going to be different this year?
It's no coincidence the coaches that he's brought in. He's brought in a Kiwi. He's brought in an Irishman. We brought in good, proper coaches. I think the Springbok squad's going to turn a lot of heads. I think that people will always talk about Andre Pollard not being the best 10, because he's really not. He's not the best 10, but he's won 2 World Cups. I think you're going to see a big difference. The Springboks have always been heavy on numbers 1 through 8. It's always been a forward-dominated team. I think that's going to continue, but I think you're going to see, with Damian Valemza taking over at 15, with the likes of Kurt Lorenzo and Kanan Mooney coming into the squad, you're going to see a different Springbok team. I think you're going to see a Springbok team capable of putting up 45-50 a game on lesser opponents on a regular basis. I think we're going to become an offensive team, but we're going to concentrate still on that forward pack, that scrum dominance, the lineouts, the set-piece play is always going to be there. It's going to be the foundation in which the Springboks are built, but I think you're going to see a bit more of an offensive explosion going forward.
Who do you think is going to be taking, when they start off, who do you think is going to be taking the scrum half helm?
It's still going to be Faw for a hot minute. I think the next in line is probably Grant Williams. If not Nahamba, who's playing for the Lions, because he can play 9 or 10. But I think right now it's going to be this first game against Ireland. It's going to be Faw de Klerk at 9. It's going to be Andre Pollard at 10.
Who's going to take that 8-man position there? Be Jasper.
Well, I was really big on Jasper Visa until what happened this weekend. Red card, last game. Yeah, that was not a way to go out. I'd like to see Quagga Smith take it, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Quagga remains a bench guy. I think it's going to be Jasper Visa to lose, but I think coming up, a lot of people think Evan Rose. I don't think it's Evan. I actually think Diamani is our future A. He is about to go to Europe, but remember, in South Africa, that does not affect your eligibility. But I think Diamani is the future A for the Springboks.
They've kind of thrown, the Springboks have been so innovative. Like, they've thrown every rule that you think you need to follow out the door. Like, oh, you need to have your players home. I'm like, nah, whatever. We'll just pick them from everywhere and win a World Cup. Like, they have really, like, they're just the progressiveness of their, just their whole system is amazing. Like, they just throw every fucking rule right out the door, and they could just put a team together and be one of the best teams in the world on any given day. So,
the name, the Fairweather Rugby Fan, was born out of what I believe to be the Springboks' lowest moment in history after a 57-0 shellacking by the All Blacks. That was actually my first game I ever watched live for the Springboks. That was my very first live game I ever watched them. I was at the stadium. And I'm used to the dark days. My love of this team has seen a lot of it. But I think right now those days are behind us. I think that South African rugby is in a really, really good place now. I think Rassie is the key to that, honestly. So I think it's going to be a great international year. In years past, I would be okay with a 60-70% win percentage. I want more. I want more. I want 80%. I want 85%. But if not, I'm used to being in those dark days. I'm okay with it. I dwell in it. I'm okay with not being number one. I'm okay with it.
Well, Keith, I think I went through all the stuff I wanted to talk to you about and ask you about. Where can people reach you at? Where can people see you at?
Find me on YouTube, the Fairweather Rugby Fan. You don't have to type in the three X's. You can also find me on Instagram, same name, and on TikTok, the exact same name. I'm constantly talking mess all I can. If you want to hear me talk mess, find me on any of those apps. And, if you're not interested in me talking mess, if you just want to hear a different voice in this game and you want to hear somebody different, come hang out with me. I'm different, definitely.
Also, your podcast.
Oh, yes. The podcast with my boy Pierre, the Now, Just Now, and Now podcast. You can find that on Spotify and Apple iTunes. We talk about rugby, but we talk about a lot of other stuff on there too, just because of the cultural differences between America and South Africa, which there are many. But you can find me on Spotify with that, the Now, Just Now, and Now podcast.
Yeah, I've listened to a bunch of those episodes. I like it. I like the randomness of the episodes, and you guys gel really well together too.
Yeah, that's my mate, man. He found me during the World Cup, and we've just, yeah. Pierre Fisser is my bro for life.
Well, thanks for coming on here, Keith. And friends, if you have any questions, you can email us at thefriendsofrugbypod@gmail.com. You can catch us on X, our favorite social media platform, X. And yeah. All right, friends. Have a good night.